If you want more control, if you want to be able to proactively manage your health plan and take and understand the costs and understand all the details when you customize your plan. And the only way to customize that is either being level funded or being self-funded or taking ownership and some risk in this transaction.
This is Christy Gupton, and I'm an employee benefits advisor. I understand how hard it is to embrace change when you have employees depending on you for a great health plan. This podcast is uniquely designed to answer your most pressing questions. Let's get right to it. If you sponsor a health plan, there's a laundry list of compliance to-dos just to stay within the law. But even more importantly, if your plan is deemed harmful to your employees from a financial standpoint, they could seek legal recourse if it seems you've not been a prudent fiduciary, as you're required to be under ERISA, the law that oversees health plans and retirement plans. In today's podcast, you'll hear from expert pharmacist and PBM founder Vinay Patel of Mako RX. Also, go back and listen to my first podcast with Vinay in season one, where we reviewed some of the fundamentals about PBMs. But today, we have some great tips and more advanced golden nuggets for you if you're in a position to customize your employee health plan. If you customize it the right way, you could exponentially enhance the care experience while simultaneously lowering the cost. Frankly, that's what any prudent fiduciary should do. Vinay and I are going to mention a courageous employee who stood up for herself and others when the health plan they were given was designed without their best interests in mind. This case is the Lewandowski versus Johnson & Johnson case. If you haven't read the complaint, you absolutely should. Each of the 74 pages of the complaint is eye-opening. Well, that's probably enough for now. Let's get to the talk with Vinay. Okay, Vinay, we have so much to talk about. I don't know how we're going to fit it in, but the subject of today's podcast is all about the Lewandowski versus Johnson & Johnson class action lawsuit that was filed in early February. I think somebody said it was the day after the Super Bowl. Oh, wow. So yeah, just after you got finished celebrating, if your team won, bam, this new, you know, blockbuster. Well, people are calling it a watershed case. I'm sure that probably has terminology that I don't know the origin of, but nevertheless, it's like the first case of its kind where an employee is holding her employer accountable for not being a good fiduciary. And it really, you know, the fiduciary duty, we could talk about that for days. Mm-hmm. But as my friend guy I really like what he's doing, Tony Sorrentino, pointed out in a webinar, the PBM arrangement in the Johnson & Johnson health plan is what first exposed them to this, you know, problem that they're going to have to deal with now. And maybe that was under the radar, you know, maybe the fiduciary duty could have been outed lots of other ways, but we're starting to see not only with this case, but also in the news, just in our country, more and more information is bubbling up about the PBM arrangements and health plans and how plan sponsors are really needing to lift the hood and look under that and pick it apart and figure out where the problems are. So since you are an awesome PBM with Mako RX, I want you to just introduce yourself to, and then share your thoughts, your, you know, initial thoughts about this case.
Thanks, Christy. I know that we're good colleagues. We've been having conversations like this since 2019, I think. I'm honored to be invited back to be on this podcast with you and the wonderful educational service that you provide to people all over the country. My name is Vinay Patel, and I'm a pharmacist by background for the last 20 or so years, and we really saw how healthcare is broken in so many different areas, and we wanted to solve just a tiny piece of it, tackling pharmacy, which is one of the crux of this case that's come out. And we have a cost-plus model, and we're excited about how we partner employer groups with not only transparency, they get to see exactly what the drug costs and how much they're paying pharmacies, but even more so how they're helping communities, their own community, by partnering them with independent pharmacies.
Amen, brother. That is what I'm all about. I love it. In this case, the PBM is Express Scripts, which is vertically integrated with Cigna, although I think they probably carved that out because I don't think Cigna is administering this health plan. I'd have to go back and read further. Nevertheless, that's beside the point. They do this thing that I have, personally, I have a problem with, but you can sort of talk around some of the logic, but also give us the bottom line logic too. But they created this category called generic specialty. Now, I have a problem with it because I like what my friend Scott Haas said on Stacey Richter's podcast. He said, either you're generic or you're specialty. You're not both. There's no gray area. If you're a generic, price yourself as a generic and tell me exactly what the per pill cost is. I'm sure it's more complicated than that. So you tell me what you think about that term, generic specialty, or that category of drugs.
Starting from a clinical perspective, just, you know, the specialty drugs are not, it's not clear defined. There's not one definition of a specialty drug. In fact, there are many different lists of specialty drugs. Depending on what insurance you're using, they could define a specialty drug differently than another insurance company, and they all have their own list, and they all say this is our specialty list. And so it's a very, just to begin with, specialty is a very vague criteria, the definition's vague in that it has a group of criteria that we use in combination to figure out or sort of triangulate if a drug could be or is specialty or not. And one of those criteria is that it requires extra patient education or extra patient monitoring because of serious side effects or a complex administration method, and checking or monitoring the patient for adherence, because these drugs are so expensive, you know, valuing that every dollar should go towards a patient outcome rather than just wasted, because we have enough waste as it is in healthcare. That's one of the criteria. So from that, born out of that, you have these specialty generics that still hopefully continue to identify drugs that from a clinical perspective should be treated with extra care and make sure the patient has good outcomes. But I think that what gets lost and what large health carriers and PBMs have done is they've taken that as cover and said, look, since it's a specialty generic, it's still going to cost the plan a lot more. And I think disassociating how we categorize drugs from how we pay for drugs or how much they cost is really, really important. And I think that's where we need to head to, is regardless of how we categorize, let's make sure that we can, and we'll talk about this later, how we can really make sure that you're getting charged a fair price for the drug and not thousands of percent above what they actually cost, like was highlighted.
Well, let's talk about the fair market price, right? There are channels in this country where we can establish what the fair price is. I mean, there are reference points, even in drugs. We talk about reference-based pricing and medical care, you know, but that's established by Medicare reimbursement rates or another reference of some other kind. But we have a reference in pharmacy too, right?
We do. So And this is not for every single medication, but for a majority of medications, you can reference what's called NADAC. And again, it's described in the brief itself. NADAC is the national average drug acquisition cost. So that's the average purchase price a pharmacy would pay their wholesaler to get this medication. And of course, it's specific by each specific drug called NDCs, but that's outlining or benchmark, at least when you can look at all the data that you have as an employer and say, what is this drug cost on the market? What are the pharmacies buying it for? Forget what your PBM may have charged you and that you paid them to dispense this medication in that claim, but then you can benchmark and say, is this a drug that's a couple percent off, or is it, again, a 1,000% off? That will help you identify these claims really quickly.
Yeah, I think there's a chart in the complaint that shows the range of percentages above the fair market price. I think the highest range was like 13,000% above the fair market. It's crazy. So it does make you sort of like go ahead and side with the plaintiff and saying, yes, she should have pointed out that the plan assets of the plan she depends on and all of her colleagues at Johnson & Johnson depend on, that are members of the plan, they depend on those assets to be spent prudently. And that's another thing I learned from this complaint. I guess the attorneys that wrote the complaint said it just plain out. Look, this is about the duty of prudence. The fiduciary duty is there to make sure that there is prudent decisions being made. I think if I searched it, the term prudent or prudence would be in there maybe 100 times. I don't know, but that's really what we're talking about. And that's where I think almost every employer in America ought to have their eyes wide open at this point and sort of asking themselves introspectively, ooh, am I being prudent? I'm sure they all intend to be, and maybe they think they are, but maybe how this case proceeds and how it's decided on and what comes out in discovery and hearings and testimony and all that, if it gets that far, I hope it does, we're going to start to see how the court looks at what fiduciaries are doing and what is considered prudent. I know it's really important in the due diligence of choosing a PBM and learning how the prescription drug benefit is structured, and also owning the fact that you as an employer have the autonomy to structure it the way you think is prudent, right? But it all boils down to one document, and that's what?
That's the agreement that you sign with either the health insurance carrier or the PBM directly that dictates the terms of this agreement for as long as you're with them. And regardless of what happens after you sign that document, the answer is going to be it's in the contract. And it doesn't matter if there's, you know, millions of people you could help, or you have 10,000 or 50,000 employees in your plan. We saw that with the North Carolina State Health Plan, that they tried to reason with very well-founded ideas. And they said, no, it's just no, because it's not in the contract. And so the only leverage an employer has, regardless of if you're 100 employees or if you're a million employees, is when you're negotiating and signing and reviewing that contract, that PBM agreement, either with your employer or directly with the PBM or the health insurance carrier.
You better have lots of eyes on that contract and every single word and phrase and clause and all of that, you know, send it out to every person you trust and make sure it's worded right. Because let's face it, man, employers, I really feel for them because they've got businesses to run and they've got, you know, employees to keep safe and everything. This is a big deal. And maybe for a lot of employers, they just think, whatever, it's just part of the health insurance. Mm-hmm. And they don't put, I guess, a lot of detailed reflection on it because they just feel like either A, there's a misconception that they can't describe the way the prescription drug benefit is going to be managed. They don't have that autonomy, so to speak. But you know differently. You know that there's a lot of different ways they can insert their own version of prudence, their own fiduciary duty to make sure that not only is the plan paying the right price, the price where the members get the best value, maybe that's not always the cheapest price, whatever, but There's just more time that needs to be spent on this pharmacy services agreement. That goes without saying. So give the audience maybe a couple of tips on places where they can dig deep and redline a pharmacy services agreement and make it better.
I want to start even before that contract gets in front of anyone. And I think you'll appreciate this because you've said this so many times. To improve your health plan, all it takes is someone who knows something, so a good consultant and some will to make a health plan better. And so, even before they get that contract, it starts with a discussion with their consultant, which is why they have consultants to help navigate, guide them, give them great, sound advice on their health plan to say, look, what do we want our health plan to look like? I think, and we do this personally, I'm guilty of it as well. A lot, and companies do this when they talk about their health plan, is that they don't really know what they want, and they should have that discussion. What do you want out of your health plan? And if they can have that discussion with their consultant first, then they can have a better idea of what they want to see when they get that contract. If you don't have any idea, then you're looking at all the shiny objects and you're saying, yes, I want that, I want that, I want that, and you get sort of lost in this is all sounds really good, and then you forget to be more critical of an agreement. But just real quick, so after that, right, once they have level set on here's what we'd expect out of our health plan, and then specifically pharmacy, there's two key areas that every employer group can focus on to help them. And one is look at the definitions. The definitions are where there's a lot of scapegoating when it comes to, like, as we just mentioned, specialty generic. Okay, if that's the definition of a drug, make sure that there's standard language that exists for these definitions and how they define brand drugs and specialty drugs, and just make sure it's standardized. And then, of course, look at access to data. If they can guarantee themselves access to their own healthcare data in that agreement, and look at the definitions, they've gone past 80% of what folks look at when they look at these agreements. And of course, there's other legal risk and analyses that need to be done from a business perspective, but this is from a healthcare perspective. Those two things would be really important for any employer to focus on, and just make sure that they have someone with healthcare expertise looking at that section of definitions to make sure that it's all as clean as possible. And then two, guarantee access to your data right there in the agreement, whether it's with the insurance carrier or whether it's with the PBM directly, so that you can have access to your data and then you can do something about it. More times than not, you don't have access to your data in there. And so then you're stuck because you don't know what's going on. You just hear about more cost increases.
Oh, man, that's good advice. In the fully insured world, which thank goodness is in the minority because we have more self-insured plans than we have fully insured plans, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But in the fully insured world, and I don't have any clients that are fully insured, so pardon my ignorance if I make a misstatement here, it's just because I don't play on that side of the field. The PBMs are vertically integrated now with the big healthcare services organizations. That's a mouthful, by the way, because I've stopped saying health insurers because they don't even call themselves insurance companies anymore. They call themselves healthcare services organizations, but gosh, that's an easy place to get tongue-tied, right? It's four words instead of two. Blue Cross, United Healthcare, Cigna, Aetna, they all have vertically integrated PBMs now. So it's like they're all in bed together. And so how do fully insured employers actually get to a pharmacy services agreement for a PBM that they didn't pick, that the insurance company or the healthcare services organization picked? I mean, if it's vertically integrated, they're not going to have access to that pharmacy services agreement, are they?
You're absolutely right, Christy. I take this to be akin to booking a vacation. If you were to book a vacation to a foreign country and you said, I don't have the time, I don't have the energy, I just want someone to plan my vacation, you'd go to a travel broker and say, book my vacation, and you just pay them to book your vacation. They'll do all the flights for you, they'll do all of your activities, they'll do all of your stays and tell you where to go eat, and you got everything planned for you. and you have no control, no customization. However, if you want to take it upon yourself to say, I want to plan my own trip, I'm going to go on to Expedia and Kayak and Google Flights and look at my own flights, and I'm going to go on Airbnb and look for, you know, my own lodging and travel and find my own activities, doing my own research, you have full control over how you want your vacation experience to go. But that requires a lot of time, energy, and responsibility to you, for you to have to plan that and organize all of it, right? So then you have to keep track of everything that you just booked. And I think that that's what we're talking about here, is that when you have a fully insured plan, all you're doing is exchanging money for a service, and you don't have any control over it because you're not taking any risk either. You're just saying, look, whatever the costs are, that's up to the health insurance company. And if you want more control, if you want to be able to proactively manage your health plan and take and understand the costs and understand all the details and have a consultant that can help you or keep things organized and keep an eye on things and give you advice and how we can better manage your plan, here's the areas that are really high cost. Here's the people that are high utilizers or expensive on the plan. Here's what we can do about them. You don't have to just throw your hands up and say, we can't do anything. And here's how we can save you money and pay less for healthcare by providing higher quality care when you customize your plan. And the only way to customize that is either being level funded or being self-funded or taking ownership and some risk in this transaction.
And in the, you know, the trend line that the fully insured plans are on, which is just constantly going up and up and up and up all the time, I truly don't understand how employers can even afford to stay fully insured anymore. But that's just me from the outside looking in. Hey, speaking of customization, this complaint, the Lewandowski versus Johnson & Johnson complaint lists, and I don't know that I'm the only person that has talked about this. There might be others, but I haven't heard anybody else talking about it. And maybe it's just special to me because I freaking love direct primary care. But this complaint actually calls out the name direct primary care because the plaintiff herself went out and sought this type of direct membership-based capitated primary care arrangement, possibly because she knew that this was a not just a great arrangement that is, it takes out a lot of the intermediaries between the doctor and patient relationship, but it's very affordable. And the downstream savings that trickle down to the patient themselves, right? Because, you know, labs and even sometimes there's in-house dispensing of really common generics that are, you know, maybe a penny a pill. So direct primary care is in the complaint if you hadn't read it already. So I know you are another big fan of direct primary care. So share your thoughts with me about that.
It was, it should be and was commendable that the plaintiff went out of her way to go find savings for the plan. And it didn't even really affect her. It was just lower cost for the plan for Johnson & Johnson to spend on her medical care that she needed. She took the time and energy to go seek out lower costs of care. And it took a lot of effort for the plaintiff to go do this.
For all the good that it did, right? Because the plan sort of ignored found better value, and they just weren't interested. At least the way the complaint reads, they just weren't interested in talking about that. As a matter of fact, I remember reading, they said, you know, saving money is no reason to go out of network. Yeah. I rolled my eyes on that one when I read it.
That's right. But I mean, these are the components or customization in a health plan that really don't mean anything inside the institution of health insurance, fully insured health insurance. And that's where there's a lot of misaligned incentives or perverse incentives that we see highlighted here time and time again.
The fact that she now sees the value of this direct relationship where you're not encumbered by the time on the clock. You know, it could be 8 p.m. It could be you know, 6 a.m., it could be whatever. Doesn't matter if the office is open or closed, you have access to your personal physician on speed dial. That's my, like my little tagline for direct primary care, and how that just improves the patient experience and improves the doctor-patient relationship. There's still too many people in America who believe that if they don't have a certain type of logo on an ID card, that they can't get even primary care. So they avoid it and wait until it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing could be further from the truth than that. And I know that MakoRx has a special relationship with direct primary care practices. Expand on that, if you don't mind.
So, you know, our goal with partnering with direct primary care was, as you mentioned, access to medical care is not only more accessible, but more convenient and affordable for people. We wanted to offer the pharmacy angle in this and say, look, combine an affordable, accessible, and convenient pharmacy option when, again, we have, you know, for any drugs that aren't already dispensed out of the direct primary care practice, you can access all of the other medicines at your local pharmacy, many at no cost to you as part of our plan. And then the rest, which is really where the real benefit comes in, is access to cost plus pricing for all of your other drugs. And so that shows people every day that they're paying a fair price for their drugs. Pharmacies are getting paid a fair reimbursement for their medications without having to fight with insurance companies. And the whole system wins. And by combining direct primary care with our pharmacy program, it allows for a more holistic healthcare experience for these people that are with direct primary care without insurance or without, you know, are on high deductible plans that don't, you know, can't realize the benefit of their health plan.
Sure. You know, that's interesting. You used the word cost plus, because this is something Joe Moose taught me. You know, no offense to Mark Cuban. He's a great guy, and I think his heart is really in the right place. And he's sort of like sucking up all of the air out of the room with his cost plus drugs company. But local independent pharmacies have been doing this a long time. They've been doing cost plus for a long time. And I think Joe probably knows better than anybody, because his family's pharmacy has been in business for 142 years. That's before health insurance ever was thought of. So thanks for putting it like that, because I think that it's fine. It's fine if you want to order your cost plus drugs from a website that Mark Cuban put up, that's fine. But you also have a community around you and people that you can have relationship with right on the ground, you know, right in your neighborhood on Main Street,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You know, so I think about the direct primary care office that's maybe on one street, and then the local independent pharmacy that's probably two or three blocks away. You know, it's just all part of your community. And I really have, that's the new buzzword for me, is community health plans, community owned health plans. So what else occurs to you about this subject that's important?
You know, I think that to summarize what we've all been saying, consultants like yourself, Christy, that buck the trends and do things differently. And you said it already yourself, you know, all of my groups are self-funded. Being proactive, employers need to realize that they have a lot of control. I know it feels or seems like it's helpless to them, but it starts by understanding. So realizing what healthcare is all about, and that everyone's in the business of healthcare. Unfortunately, the way that we have it structured here in the U.S. And so once you realize and accept that, then you got to go into understanding it. And once you understand it, then the next step is finding a good consultant that can help guide you through the process and say, okay, if I were to manage this like every other part of my business and I were to eliminate all the waste, where would I start? And you would go and say, okay, well, I need access to information or data first to understand if where the waste is. And then you got to have an expert like yourself to understand the waste on the medical side, and have an expert on the pharmacy side to understand where the waste is. And then once you do that, then you can ruthlessly take care of that. And it's not just about cutting costs. It's not just about cutting expenses. The funniest thing in healthcare is the cheapest, sometimes the lowest cost provider is also the highest quality provider. you get so much waste in healthcare when you realize that it's two or three times to more expensive for a certain procedure or for a medication because of all of the extra steps or all the extra middlemen that are involved in that, you know, getting that care. And when you take all that out, you realize that not only do you save money, but you get higher quality care and a better patient experience, which is sort of backwards from everything else in the country in terms of, you know, economic principles. And so, you know, that's really important, going through the process, understanding that you need to manage this like you do every other part of your business. And you need to have good experts around you that are advising you and being a fiduciary in situ, meaning, you know, you are acting like a fiduciary. You have the best interests of the plan in mind. You're really there just to be an advisor to help tell the plan, if you want to make this decision, this is the impact you'll have on the plan. And it's up to you. It's your plan. It's your healthcare. It's your employees that you're taking care of. Here's how it'll impact the plan. And after all that, then you'll realize that, you know, customizing your own health plan would have been help you provide more benefits to your business and your employees, and hopefully, you know, they'll appreciate you for that.
And you know, Vinay, I've seen you personally take that initiative on behalf of a client and on behalf of their plan. You know, I think I remember a case where there was a low value drug that was prescribed. It was going to be several hundred dollars more than a generic that was on your $0 copay list at Mako Rx. And you made a special effort to point that out to me and the plan sponsor. And we had a quick conversation about it, that this is, you know, it's okay. I'll, you know, process the reimbursement if that's what you want me to do, or I'll explain to the member that there's a better option. And of course, the plan sponsor said, yes, let's explain to the member that there's a better option. And it all worked out, but it does. It takes that kind of advocacy, right, and attention to detail and good partners, right, that don't have misaligned incentives.
Right.
I know that's a buzzword, but let's face it, when the partners that you've ponied up with, their incentives are different than yours. In other words, you're on opposite sides of the table.
Yeah.
You're not on the same side of these issues, sort of holding hands together and in partnership where your incentives are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're trying to get to in these health plans. And it just takes good partners. And Vinay, you are a good partner. So thank you so much for what you do in our healthcare system and for me.
Thank you, Christy. We can't do it alone. It's going to take a whole team of us to try to fix this huge problem that we have. So
you are right. Appreciate it. Well, thank you for being my guest today. I wish you the best. See you soon.
Likewise. Take care.
Thank you for listening to our important discussion. For more information about the work we do at Custom Benefit Solutions, visit our website at custombenefits.work.